There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of Bitcoin. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of Bitcoin on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every family has an origin story, one passed down through the generations. Mine happens to be a mystery involving my great-great-grandmother left behind in Sicily. I'm Joe Piazza, and my new podcast will transport you to the gorgeous island of Sicily as I trace my roots back through a whodunit for the ages. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Long Shot, a production of McClatchy Studios and iHeartRadio. I'm executive producer Davin Coburn. This is a bonus feature for Return Man, taking you behind the scenes of a reporting process that lasted more than 3 years. Having listened to the show, audiences will know that we have far more context now for the events of October 20th, 1972.
It involves race, the mental state of the person, and a town that was scared to death to say anything.
But it's not clear we have actual answers yet about what happened in the Lancaster police station.
They say he committed suicide, but they say.
As you heard in Part 8, Paula Johnson and her team at Syracuse University's Cold Case Justice Initiative could soon work to change that, bringing legal expertise to the case Brett McCormick and our production team investigated as reporters.
Sometimes our training may lead us to find that something raises an issue for us that journalists may not pick up on.
At the time of Jim Duncan's death, no outside organizations investigated the shooting, and we initially reached out to Johnson to see if her team at CCJI might have done so more recently. Johnson told us they hadn't, and we did not collaborate with her team on this project. But after reading the few publicly available stories about Duncan's death, Johnson told us she, too, had many questions, and that her team might now begin looking into it. I had the chance to speak with Johnson at length about how her team of student volunteers approaches these investigations, what could come next in Duncan's case, and that elusive concept of closure. This conversation has been edited for length and clarity.
My name is Paula C. Johnson. I am professor of law at Syracuse University College of Law. I am also the director of the Cold Case Justice Initiative at Syracuse University College of Law. Our work is to assist families in seeking information and justice and accountability for racially motivated killings of their loved ones that have not been solved, and no one has been held to answer for those crimes.
When Jim Duncan died, there were a few stories written in national publications like Jet Magazine and the New York Times, but that was about it. What was your reaction to reading some of those stories? It clearly seems like they raised some questions for you the way they did for us.
Yes. I mean, having read the Jet Magazine piece, having looked at the New York Times piece, you know, and just having a sense of the kinds of suspicions that are raised by this case, you know, there are more areas that we would want to look into, you know, what his experiences were, what his demeanor was at these, you know, relevant times. It was very interesting to see the different accounts about what was going on, you know, for Mr. Duncan with respect to drugs. And that needn't be, you know, really here nor there, as opposed to the most pivotal part of this. And that is when he goes into the police station. I mean, it's really curious to me, for instance, that he walked in there and didn't say anything to anyone. It just doesn't quite make sense to me. Now, I've got the impression from what I've read that, you know, there were some real issues, racial issues, in terms of the police department and the rest of the community. And so whatever has been documented, or even those things that have not been documented, but that people would be willing to discuss, I think those things are really critical with respect to the Black community and what appeared to be a pretty all-white or largely white police force in that community. I mean, I could go on and on about the kinds of things we'd want to know, but that's the sort of thing that we'd want to be able to learn more about.
At times in the past, CCJI has collaborated with reporters. How do you think journalists and lawyers approach these sorts of investigations differently?
Yeah, one of the things that, you know, we would do as an initial matter is to read everything that we can get our hands on that's available in the public sphere. That includes any reportage that has taken place, you know, print, broadcast, you name it. And we would begin to identify a list of people that may have some knowledge or may have some impressions. We'd want to talk to those people. But beyond that, we would look into any kind of documents that may be part of the legal investigation aspect of this. And that sometimes will require certainly FOIA requests. And, you know, that's something that we would do. Now, you know, we ourselves are not prosecutors. And so what we try to do is put that information in some kind of report. And if it looks as though there was something, you know, criminal involved, then we present that to the relevant authorities. They may be local prosecutors. They may be federal or state prosecutors. You know, but as attorneys, we kind of speak that language and understand what kinds of things would be important for them to take that and say, maybe we'll convene a grand jury or take this at that point. But it's all about really the comprehensiveness and the thoroughness of following every lead. And, you know, and it's something that I tell the students all the time, and that is, don't draw conclusions on things before we get as much information as we can, because something may seem to be insignificant, but we can't declare that it's insignificant unless we have followed it. And only then are we able to dismiss it as something that really may have no bearing on the situation.
So as lawyers, then your team would take on a family member, in this case, a family member of Jim Duncan's, as a client. Is that right?
Yeah, generally speaking. Very often what happens is that a family member will contact us, or a community member will say, it's been however many decades and law enforcement has said one thing, we've never quite believed that, or we think that there is more to be discovered about this. Can you help us? And so we take on, you know, that matter, and we are doing that on behalf of the families, you know, to try to, you know, help amass as much information and create some sort of case, you know, profile as to what we think has happened.
And by definition, your team is looking into cases that are decades old. That means paperwork and other evidence could have been destroyed. Things simply get lost over time. How do you handle that? How does your team make a case out of evidence that may no longer exist?
Well, I mean, that's the most difficult thing with cases that are defined as cold cases. When you're talking about something that's 40, 50 or more years old, people have passed away. Documents have been, you know, lost just in the process of moving. And so sometimes we really are looking for a needle in a haystack. So that becomes a very difficult task. It's very meticulous to have to go through it. And again, as I say to our students, sometimes you don't even know what you're looking for. right? You simply know that you're looking for something that suggests that it is connected to the main inquiry. And so that process can be quite difficult.
And even if there might not be a satisfying legal resolution to one of your cases, is it fair to say that family and friends just getting more clarity on what actually happened begins to provide a little bit more closure?
Yeah. The word closure in these contexts, I find to be a very loaded term, because in a number of instances, people will ask us, why are you continuing to look into these cases that are decades old, right? Why don't you, and by you, what is really meant is, why don't these families just move on, right? It's been 50 years. Don't stay stuck in the past. And our response to that is, to the extent that the family do not have as much information as is possible to obtain about what happened to their loved one, there is no moving on, right? There is no closure, because it remains an open wound. Certainly people go on with their lives, but it does mean that there is something that has not been determined, and they want for there to be something final about it. And that finality is a sense of justice. If someone is responsible for taking someone else's life, or for propagating a story that is not accurate, you know, if they are shielding other people who participated and so are responsible, the families deserve to know that. Whole communities deserve to know that. You know, those things were done as messages to entire Black communities. And so the closure, so to speak, goes beyond any particular family member, any particular community. This is a demand for justice for the entire American society.
We'll be right back after the break.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Every family has skeletons in their closet. Mine certainly does. Ones that go back 100 years and reach thousands of miles back to our hometown in Sicily. Ever since I can remember, my relatives told the story of my great-great-grandmother who was killed by the mafia. I'm Joe Piazza, and in my new podcast, I'm taking on a generational vendetta, visiting the scene of the crime, confronting mafia experts, tracking down Italian officials, and even consulting mediums to set the record straight on my great-great-grandmother's mysterious disappearance. And in between the fact-finding missions, I'll be drinking a lot of wine and eating all of the pasta. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storr on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
When you take on a case, how long do these investigations take? How much time are you and your students going to be investing in it?
Well, you know, the time frames always differ with respect to the cases. And we've been working with some for upwards of, you know, a decade ourselves. I really should put it this way. The information is there because there are people who are knowledgeable, right? And so if the people who are knowledgeable would come forward, that would make our work exceedingly less difficult. But to the extent that that is not availing, we have to try to find it, you know, when we have the wherewithal, the means, the time. So much of this really requires footwork. You can't just do it sitting at a desk and getting to know people, right? Developing a rapport so that they will be willing to speak with you. You know, you simply don't just go to folks and really, you know, try to ask them about one of, if not the most harrowing experiences that they have had in their own lives. You've got to spend time with people before they have a reason to trust you. And that's simply the human dimension of it. There has to be empathy and compassion, even as you are trying to gather information. So it's a constant process of visiting and revisiting and going back over territory that you may have covered before, to see if it leads you to something else, and when it does, to follow those paths as well.
CCJI has a very specific mission. What was the genesis of this program, and why did you feel like these particular kinds of cases were important to be focusing on?
When the first Emmett Till Act was passed in 2007, really signed into law in 2008, we began to look into this. And my co-director, Janice McDonald, who is now an emerita professor at the College of Law, was in Faraday, Louisiana. And she and a journalist, Stanley Nelson, had struck up a conversation. And he was looking into the death of a man named Frank Morris. Mr. Morris had been killed in December of 1964 when three white men had come to his shop and set it aflame. And it's believed that the people who set his shoe shop aflame were members of the local law enforcement and possibly Klan members as well. So as, you know, Professor McDonald and Stanley Morris were discussing this, he mentioned that the family was really interested in getting more information that he, as a journalist, didn't feel that he might be able to provide for them. And would we be willing to, you know, talk to the family and see what we as lawyers might be able to do? And from there, we began to notice that there were other cases that hadn't been solved. And as we began to travel, people began to become aware of the work we were doing. And whenever we would make these trips, you know, invariably people would come to us and say, you know, something suspicious happened about our family member's death. We never accepted what was told to us, you know, the official story. Would you be able to help our family as well? And so that is how it just grew. I mean, it just grew. There are just so many of the instances. And from there, we actually, you know, we created a course looking at, you know, racial history, legal analysis, you know, around the work that we were doing. And so the project itself blossomed from that.
We'll be back after the break.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Every family has skeletons in their closet. Mine certainly does. Ones that go back 100 years and reach thousands of miles back to our hometown in Sicily. Ever since I can remember, my relatives told the story of my great-great-grandmother who was killed by the mafia. I'm Joe Piazza, and in my new podcast, I'm taking on a generational vendetta, visiting the scene of the crime, confronting mafia experts, tracking down Italian officials, and even consulting mediums to set the record straight on my great-great-grandmother's mysterious disappearance. And in between the fact-finding missions, I'll be drinking a lot of wine and eating all of the pasta. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storr on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I've seen that in the past few years, you've taken students to the King Center in Atlanta and other historic locations in the civil rights movement. For your students today, what's their understanding of events that happened 50 or 60 years ago?
Yes, we did. Part of the work with the students is that the civil rights era, you know, as we understand that from the, say, you know, mid to late 1950s to the mid 70s, with a concentration in the 1960s, is something that this younger generation of students don't know as a firsthand matter, and have not generally been taught about it in their secondary or even undergraduate educations. So much of what we have done in the course of working on the cases has been also educating our students about this era in American history. I mean, they certainly knew that there's racial discrimination in the United States, but they didn't have the kind of in-depth awareness that this was so endemic in American society and what that meant.
Some of you may be familiar with the Emmett Till case. Any of you familiar with at least the name Emmett Till in Mississippi in 1955, 14-year-old youth, young person who was...
As they were reading through these accounts, sometimes the students would come back to us and say they sometimes couldn't tell whether they were reading something from the present or something back in the 1960s, because the stories and the accounts sounded so familiar to something that they heard on the news just days before.
It has always been the families who have insisted that the world, that government officials, that the entities and the apparatus of society and law enforcement take notice of these events, that the lives of their loved ones, of their children, matter, and that they matter in the places where other people's lives matter.
And so, you know, this was part of the education for them to understand that to some degree, there was an unbroken chain in these racially motivated killings. So we took the students to Atlanta and we've taken them to Mississippi so that they would get a firsthand understanding of what had happened in U.S. history. Now, I think the Atlanta trip that you're also referring to was one in which CCJI and Syracuse University sponsored a retreat for the family members of victims of racially motivated crimes.
What you will hear this evening are from several family members who will speak with you briefly about the experiences that they've had in their families.
We had a public forum at Ebenezer Baptist Church, and as you know, that was Dr. King's church. So there was a public forum where we talked about the work. We talked about the emotional and, you know, psychological aspects of racial trauma.
We know that this isn't all about law. We know that the family's needs go beyond simply making sure that there is, say, a conviction or that there is even a civil matter that happens in the legal system. We want to recognize that before those needs are met, we can't consider this work to be finished either.
But then there was a closed aspect of this that was just for the families to meet and interact with each other. It was emotional for all of us. I will never forget that as the family members went around and they kind of talked about, you know, why they were there and what happened in their own families, you know, what they knew about it and all the questions that remained in the cases, one man stood up and he said, "I have always thought that what our family experienced was one of the worst things I had ever heard about, ever known about." And then he said, until I heard from this other family, right? Because in a sense, they had all been doing this in isolation, but now they were able to connect with each other about something that no one else could really understand. And it was just an incredibly powerful, powerful moment. That retreat was something that really epitomized the enormity of what has taken place in this society and how much the families have had to hold throughout the years of longing for justice for their family members.
I'm Davin Coburn. Return Man is a production of The Herald, McClatchy Studios, and iHeartRadio. Brett McCormick is the lead reporter, and the show is produced by Matt Walsh, Kara Tabor, Kata Stevens, and Rachel Wise. I'm the executive producer for McClatchy Studios. The executive producer for iHeartRadio is Sean Titone. For lots more on this story, go to heraldonline.com/returnman. If you have any additional information about Jim Duncan's life or death, email us at returnman@heraldonline.com. To continue supporting this kind of work, visit heraldonline.com/podcasts and consider a digital subscription. And for more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Johnny B. Good, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every family has an origin story, one passed down through the generations. Mine happens to be a mystery involving my great-great-grandmother left behind in Sicily. I'm Joe Piazza, and my new podcast will transport you to the gorgeous island of Sicily as I trace my roots back through a whodunit for the ages. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.